This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. It's Tech Talk. Ah, human beings. We love to do things that we're not supposed to, especially things we know can be harmful to us. No one has made a better currency of that fact than our own serial exploiter, Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. And he's here today to let us in on life's guilty pleasures. Let's start with the very, very important information. How much chocolate can BFM's listeners eat?
Hey, Frida, there's good news and there's bad news here. I mean, it is me, so there's got to be some bad news, right? So eating 100 grams of dark chocolate sends heart-protecting antioxidants swarming into your body. Have your dark chocolate with a high cocoa content, and it's usually quite low in sugar and fat as well. And if you spend a little bit extra on the fair trade stuff, you're doing some social good too. So, yes, dark chocolate, good. Milk chocolate, on the other hand, which is, you know, the more common one and the one that most of us eat most often, doesn't have the same health benefits at all. It does make you feel better because it activates pleasure centers in the brain for a while, yeah. But there's something about adding the milk to the cocoa that stops those antioxidants from bursting free. Basically, it binds the antioxidants to the fat.
Lucky for you, I love my dark chocolate.
Good.
Anyway, but can one chocolate bar really be that bad? And how big of a bar are we talking about?
I mean, no, we're talking about, you know, like a
100 grams.
Not even like a Mars bar size, like 25, 30 gram bar of chocolate. According to New Scientist, which helped me with a lot of the information for today, if you want to shed the calories from that single chocolate bar, you'll need to run up flights of stairs for approximately 20 minutes. Which is, you know, kind of quite physical exercise for one bar of chocolate.
True.
So you might want to consider a calorie-controlled diet if you want to keep, you know, Mississippi mud pie on your menu. An interesting fact I found out from New Scientist, certainly in the UK, the chocolate industry was largely set up by Quaker families who wanted to get people to switch from alcohol.
The Quakers,
yeah.
They should just stuck to oats.
Well, exactly. No, but they, because the UK at that time had a real alcohol problem, gin palaces and things like that. Alcohol was very, very cheap and it was disrupting family life. I'm doing my social historian bit here. So they actually set up the chocolate industry to give people an alternative pleasure to alcohol. Yeah. Obviously, you know, they never got as far as imagining the chocolate martini. That's where it all falls down.
Now, with that good news, let's move on to lunch. Should we order the steak or opt for the salad?
I'm good with the salad. And you told me just before the show you're going to go salad today as well. The health risks associated with too much red meat are well documented. Although I was a bit hard on dairy a minute ago, it seems that there might be something to actually pairing meat with cheese. Now, it sounds like, you know, adding a whole load of cheese to a big steak is going to make it worse. But France, which is the world's largest cheese consumer and is pretty high on the red meat consumption front, has one of the developed world's lowest heart disease rates. In fact, I think it has the lowest heart disease rate.
I think that's coupled with cigarettes.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get into that discussion right now.
Anyway.
But anyway, it could well be that cheese lowers the amount of the LDL cholesterol in your blood. That's the so-called bad cholesterol. And because cheese contains live and fermented bacteria, it may actually influence the way our bodies absorb nutrients, both good and bad. And it doesn't end there as well. The calcium in cheese and milk may offset some of the risk of colorectal cancer that red meat brings. I always like to say colorectal cancer on a Friday morning. A high fiber diet also helps. And funnily enough, eating your steak with cold potatoes, not hot, but cold potatoes. When potatoes are cooked and then cooled, they produce a substance called butyrylated resistant starch.
Okay.
And that can help to protect your gut. And then, of course, you know, there's our normal fruit and veg, and they have flavonoids in them, which can help to protect us from the nitrite preservatives that are often used to preserve processed meat.
Okay, and I know this is my favorites. How much time can you spend on the sofa and be healthy?
No more than 10 minutes. No, sofa surfing is bad, very, very bad. But there are ways to offset it that don't require you to become a CrossFit junkie or fly off to Australia to run in a marathon. There are things like high intensity interval training. Now that allows you to get fit with short bursts of exercise. Okay. And it doesn't actually need to be too arduous. Now, a study at the UK's Heriot Watt University found that 10 minutes of leisurely cycling coupled with two 20 second sprints during the cycling, if you did that three times a week, it boosted cardiovascular fitness as much as much longer and much longer, more conventional workouts.
That's not too bad.
That's not too bad at all.
But still, you know, better than sitting on the sofa. You know, you still have to, you know, get off the sofa, basically.
You do, yes.
Yeah. So high-intensity exercise isn't for everyone. And are they destined to die on their couches?
Simply yes. No, of course not. Those who are especially exercise averse, and that is actually a genuine medical condition. Some people are exercise averse. Any kind of form of strenuous exercise has effects on their heart rate, and they can't regulate blood pressure and things like that. They can also look into low intensity interval training as an alternative. Even something as simple as taking a 2 minute stroll every hour, so breaking from your desk to take a 2 minute stroll around the office or whatever, that can hugely improve your lifespan, according to a University of Utah survey. And in a case study of more than 400,000 people in Taiwan, there's a suggestion that it's actually the first 15 to 20 minutes of exercise that bring the most benefit. So, you know, take that again, marathon runners. So much so that 20 minutes of exercise could actually add 30 minutes to your lifespan.
Right.
Which is quite incredible, really.
Yeah, and it comes back to our pedometers and the 10,000 steps, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just a little bit
every day
for this movement.
And another study this week shows that standing up for 4 hours a day can also bring huge benefits. It increases your productivity. It lowers your stress. It can also reduce the risk of stroke and diabetes, if I remember correctly. So it actually suggests alternating between sitting and standing during your working day. So work standing up for a while, sort of 15, 20 minutes, then sit down for 15, 20 minutes. And all of very, very simple things that can bring positive benefits to your life.
Right. So after listening to all this, you know, I'm sure some might be needing a drink right now. So are you going to tell them that they can enjoy one?
There have been studies in the past that suggest, you know, one alcoholic drink a day can help to reduce the risk of heart attacks.
I've heard the wine.
Yeah, the wine, yeah. Mm-hmm. It now seems that this only applies to women over the age of 65. So, very sorry, listeners. And yes, as you said, red
unless
wine freedom.
Unless you're a woman over 65.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for you.
The tannins in red wine are good for you, but the negatives of the alcohol may outweigh the positives there. So the best you can actually hope for is to minimize the pounding of your head the next day. Studies in rats have shown that darkness helps the body to recover faster. So I'm not sure where the scientists found all these drunk rats, but I certainly don't want to get any beer from that place. On average, the rats bounced back after 8 hours in darkness versus 20 hours in daylight, which also suggests they did this in Finland during the during the summer. Sleep it off. It off really is the best way.
All right. Yeah, okay. We can talk about that. That could be next week's episode. Now, we've talked mainly about lifestyle choices so far. So what about our behavior?
Well, this is one that I've been paying attention to for a while. So our phones, our tablets and our computers are all trying to kill us. Text neck is a genuine condition that results from the upper back sprain. Resulting from looking down at your phone. Apparently, dipping your chin to look down at that screen adds the equivalent of an extra 12 kilograms of pressure on your spine just from pushing your head. Yeah, exactly. And in my case, with my huge brain, that's probably about 30 kilos. So to avoid that, obviously, you know, keep your chin up. And you're suggested to take breaks from looking down at your phone rather than wait for the pain. So avoidance rather than cure. And also the way we hold tablets and phones can also cause stress injuries, as can the way we prod at them with our fingers and our thumbs. So, yeah, just go gentle.
So chin up. It's not just an expression.
No, it's not just an expression.
So that's what you've been paying attention to, sore thumbs.
Not exactly. I mean, what grabbed me most is actually the blue light emissions of these devices. Now, these have been linked to a reduction in melatonin levels, which makes it harder for us to sleep at night. They might also reduce the amount of time we spend in REM sleep, so hence we feel more tired the next day. Some scientists have recommended not looking at your screen for at least 2 hours before you go to bed. So, you know, maybe it's time to pick up those books and magazines again. And there's also a lot of debate about TVs and LED lights because they have much whether they have much the same effect as well. The old incandescent bulbs, yes, they wasted a lot of power and energy, but they didn't emit this this blue light, so they were actually much better from us from a sleep cycle point of view than the current low power LED bulbs seem to be.
And a question I ask myself every week: how do we know you're not lying about everything you've said today?
Because I am actually a truthful person. I wouldn't lie to our listeners. I wouldn't try and trick them. I pride myself on being an honest person, and some of those things I just said are actually true. We all lie. Anyone who says they don't lie is either an idiot or someone you really, really want to avoid. Lies don't just make our lives easier. They can actually be a kinder way of responding to people than the truth. So saying to somebody, you know, I'm sorry, I can't come to your dinner party, I've got to work that night, it's a much nicer and kinder thing to say to them than the last time I ate your food, I nearly died and I'm now a case study in a medical textbook. You know, you don't need to let somebody know that. What we can do is learn to lie better. So natural performers, people like radio presenters and their regular guests, for example, make very good liars because they speak well, they don't and, you know, they make trustworthy gestures like eye contact, which, again, we don't need on the radio, thankfully. And also, very good for me, it seems that good-looking people are more believing when they lie than ugly people. I'm not kidding. This is actually the truth. So all I can say is good luck, Sepp Blatter.
Man, I'm a dish, culturepop.com. You'll be with Jeff Sandu after this for Geeks Squawk. It's Tech Talk, BFF 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.